This is the one with fucking moving plants.
And an ecological message delivered by people with terrible accents.
Who, oddly enough, are not played by Catriona Olsen.
Inside the biodome, things are growing.
The plants are fucking moving and rebelling and taking over. Run for your life!
It's called...
I really don't want to review this episode.
It's called Hot House.
Really, really don't want to do this.
Here we, possibly I, go.
Reviewing audiobooks now too, cause we love our Doctor Who.
Encountering we're in Tarmadark, Dalek, Spacetime, and Glam Rock.
Starlet phones are awful, that's the TARDIS way.
We're a punk in a Mary's Kane.
That's Kane with a K.
Who back when?
Reviewing all the poo there is.
Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes please.
Audiobook by audiobook, even those are gobbledygook.
We'll review them all you see, so join us on this odyssey. It's who back when? Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to episode A015 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
And I'm JD.
Yes, you are. Nailed it. And today, we are reviewing Hot House. Oh my goodness. It's got plants that move, that live. And ladies and gentlemen, you can't see this. I'm on Skype with JD right now. Open brackets. Who hates living plants in fiction?
No,
close brackets.
No, let's get this right.
Okay.
Let's get this right for the audience out there. You know, most people have sensible phobias, and I have two of them. You know, terrified of needles. Most people don't like needles.
Very sensible.
And drowning. I can't swim. So, you know, drowning is a big fear. Don't like needles. Don't like drowning. Third fear, moving plants.
Moving plants.
David Triffid scares me to hell. Little Shop of Horrors terrifies me. Man-Eater of Surrey Green, the Avengers episode, scares me. Seeds of Death, Doctor Who episode, Tom Baker, scares me. This, oh, God.
No, sorry. I'm not laughing at your phobia. I think that's perfectly valid. But this episode, it has moments of such dumbness. Surely that must alleviate the scare factor a little bit.
I think the problem is that I can barely see the dumbness for not wanting to have listened to this episode.
Oh, I see.
And if you're wondering why there's been such a gap between Orbis and Hot House, it's because I've been trying not to listen to this episode.
Fair enough.
You know, it's the one that since we started 15 episodes ago on this, I have been dreading getting to. I didn't listen to it when I listened to the Eighth Doctor Adventures the first time around, and sadly now I have to.
No. Well, I am very sorry to have put you through this.
Damn you, Doctor Who.
Okay, question for you.
But here's a Doctor Who fact.
Okay.
But it's for our recording, so it'll be slightly out of date by the time you listeners get to hear this. We are recording this 1 year to the day after the announcement of Peter Capaldi.
Oh my goodness, really? 1 year to the day?
Yep.
Oh.
So 1 year ago today, it was revealed that Doctor number 12, 13, 1, possibly, is going to be played by Peter Capaldi. And we are literally under 3 weeks away.
Yeah, I know. I was just about to say. Oh my God, there are teaser trailers coming out the wazoo. I cannot wait.
So it is a new set of, you know, Doctor Who coming up, and I'm forced to listen to things with moving plant.
I'm really sorry. But, well, I do have a question for you.
Yes.
The aliens that we encounter here, or the monsters, spoiler alert, Crinoids, they are a classic alien. They're a classic foe. Do they reoccur a lot? Like, will we encounter the Crinoids often?
No. And, you know, I think it'll be a comment I make during the episode about this episode. But it is a direct sequel to the 1976 Tom Baker episode, The Seeds of Doom.
That I remember. I don't remember the episodes that well, not sort of step by step or plot point by plot point, but I do remember very vividly watching it as a child, and it's scaring the shit out of me. It's the one with
it, me as well, but that's not obvious. That's obviously not
not a surprise. No,
not a surprise.
No, a good episode though. Good series, I recall.
Yes, it is, and got the late Elizabeth Sladen as Sarah Jane Smith, who was at the height of her chemistry with Tom Baker at this point. So yes, but we will come to it. We are in fact doing Hot House, which was, as I said, the sequel to The Seeds of Doom, and it has been written by Jonathan Morris.
Okay.
Jonathan Morris has a previous Doctor Who 8 Doctor Adventures link.
Oh, really?
He wrote Max Warp.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he went and ruined it by writing this episode.
Oh, well, he didn't ruin Max Warp.
No, but he's ruined my opinion of him.
Has he written anything that we're going to review later on?
Yes, he's written another 4 8 Doctor Adventures.
So is this just the calm before the storm? Are we really going to hate him by the end of it, or will he redeem himself?
He'll redeem because he doesn't do plants again, so okay. I think it's all good.
That's good, fair enough.
Although I think he does spiders, which is a little bit of a spoiler.
Oh, interesting.
So should we jump into our B-Scout?
Let's jump into it. In 2060, the world has become partially uninhabitable due to global warming.
The United Kingdom has been affected by a drought, and all the rainforests of the Amazon are deserts.
In 5 biodomes in the south of England, someone is trying to save the world, though.
But his efforts have come to the attention of the Doctor and the undercover Miss Lucy Miller.
Now, the world is in danger, and our heroes must go into the undergrowth of the Hothouse.
You are welcome, people. That was far better than the episode.
It's not that bad. Don't worry about it. Have you seen Biodome with Paulie Shaw and I think Stephen Baldwin?
No, but it was referenced in The Simpsons once.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's what springs to mind. Okay, all right. Let's do this stuff. Do you want to take it away?
We get a press conference and an environmental activist who happened to be a former rock star called Alex Marlowe, who is played by the amazing Nigel Planer from The Young Ones.
Yeah, he was Neil.
Yeah. And we discover during this press conference that Britain has been affected by a drought. And the government has said there's been a lot of rationing of water. And there is this pressure group, which is called the League of Nature.
Yes.
And, you know, in this press conference, we discover that species have become extinct, you know, and the League of Nature will basically do what it can in order to save the world.
Yeah. In this intro to the League of Nature, though, and Mr. Marlowe, as far as I recall, there's no mention of the biodomes. There's no, like, you're doing something freaking down to earth, no pun intended. You're doing something tangible to improve nature. As far as you can tell, they're actually just these protesters.
Yeah, and, you know, they're getting called fascist by the interviewer.
Yeah, because his opinions are basically like, no, mankind should step aside in favor of nature, and only one of these two can actually survive on the planet.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that was necessarily fascism. I would say it was, you know, much more sort of like Greenpeace than fascism.
Even though Greenpeace doesn't necessarily say, well, we're going to kill off humans, or humanity deserves to die.
No, but PETA does.
PETA.
PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
But that's a different thing, though.
Yes, but PETA is very much like the League of Nature. But, you know, do I think Alex Marlowe is a nutcase? At the end of this press conference, quite clearly yes.
Well, yeah, definitely.
But
he's not the only person who's being interviewed.
No, there's this young girl being interviewed who says that, you know, she's prepared to die for the League of Nature's cause. And she's even willing to kill for it.
That is crazy. She should have been arrested right then and there. I get that. Okay, spoiler alert. She is Lucy Miller. We recognize her voice and we're going to even meet her in a little while again. But she's saying this to freaking, like, the media. That's insane. It touches upon premeditated murder.
Yeah, it is a little bit crazy. But
isn't that a crime? I'm sorry, is that not a crime to go out in public and say that you're prepared to murder for your cause?
No, she says she's prepared to kill for it. She doesn't actually say who she's going to kill or what she's going to kill. She doesn't actually threaten anyone.
Okay. Well, you're the expert. I trust you.
It's hyperbole. If she'd have said, yes, I'm prepared to kill the Prime Minister for it, yes, in which case arrest her right now.
Yeah, okay, fair. So, all right, fine.
We skip forward.
Boom, intro sequence, nice title music, title sequence.
Best bit of the episode. And
it's a different title sequence. It is, isn't it? In this one, I remember thinking this. I don't know if it was in this one or the last one. I'm pretty sure they've switched to a different tune.
Yes, they have. They did it in Orbis.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, they did it in the last one. They've slightly changed the theme tune.
Okay.
Don't like it as much as the last
one. No, it doesn't have as much oomph. To me, personally, I still think Blood of the Daleks had the most oomph and vigour to it of the Eighth Doctor Adventures.
So, we now find out that there is a top-secret research field.
Yeah.
And basically, it is like a private military-run compound.
Yeah.
You know, it's got G4 security, and it's got big biodomes.
Exactly. This is the titular hothouse.
Yeah, it's like Project Eden.
Yeah, exactly.
In the south of England.
Except really sinister. And super-duper secretive.
Yeah. The Doctor is here. And he's talking to a lady called Hazel.
Yes.
And they're heading towards the High House in this car, and they're just having a little chat. Basically, she mentions that UNIT was contacted by her World Ecology Bureau, and using the space-time telegraph, they've summoned the Doctor to Earth to try and fix the planet.
Has that been used before?
That entire paragraph is just littered with references. Obviously, UNIT.
Yeah.
The World Ecology Bureau was first mentioned in Seeds of Doom.
Okay.
Which was obviously the first Crinoid episode.
Sure.
The Space-Time Telegraph was mentioned in Revenge of the Cybermen, Terror of the Zygons, and it was mentioned in Day of the Doctor. So yes, it was given to the Brigadier by the Doctor to contact him in times of need.
Oh, right. So it's like a bat signal.
Yes.
It's the Doc signal. That is great. Okay, good. All right, thank you very much. Clarified. So, anyway, they arrive at the hothouse compound, and there they meet a woman who is not Katarina Olsen, but who is... She's playing, like, the budget version of Katarina Olsen's Russian character in... what was it called?
Breaking Town.
Yes, that's it. The Auton episode.
Yes. It's the worst Russian accent I've heard.
Oh, it's terrible.
Possibly ever.
Absolutely awful. What's her name? Ondrak. Christina Ondrak. It is, her accent is awful. Do you know what we haven't had in a while? In fact, I don't even know if we had any in Orbis. Do you want to do a soundbite of one of the worst accents ever?
Yes. Okay. Let us soundbite this accent.
Soundbites!
Some areas of the compound are still undergoing construction. We wouldn't want you to get injured.
Okay. So she goes, yeah, this is top secret. You're from the World Ecology Bureau, yada, yada, yada. No one cares. You can't actually see all these things. Doc goes, by the way, this might be something to track. He introduces himself as Dr. John Smith.
Correct, he does.
Which he has not done, I think, in the Eighth Doctor Adventure so far. I don't think he's used that alias.
No, yeah, I don't think he has either. And
he wants to meet Marlow.
Yeah, but Bad Russian goes to get some passes and says, "Ah, please come to see assistant Miss Lucy Miller."
Beautiful. That is beautiful.
And the doctor goes, "Yes, I remember you from 5 minutes ago on the news."
Yeah, aren't you the girl I heard in the pre-title sequence? And they pretend to not know each other. There's this whole spiel. He spills, is it tea or whatever it is, on her.
Yeah,
and,
it's a drink.
Yeah, exactly. Ruins her dress, but also gets from her, I don't even really know, presumably gets from her a pass.
He gets a real security pass from Lucy and ruins her dress, which, let's be honest, is probably a good thing.
Yeah. It's actually probably dissolving now. Primark quality.
What we also see in the cutscene is Marlow is watching this.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
On closed circuit TV.
Yes, that's right. And he recognizes the Doctor.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
So Doc and Hazel go to the biodome, or one of the biodomes.
Yeah.
And this biodome is an awful lot of plants which no longer exist. They have been made extinct over the planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we heard earlier that the Amazon has become desert. So, you know, this is good work that these people are doing.
Yeah.
This is a real good thing. Bad Russian says that they're doing this in order to check for medicinal purposes and be able to reseed all of the rainforest.
Yeah, sure.
So this is great work. This is not a bad person in the bunch so far.
No, well, sure. They're hippies with big hearts and big wallets as well, so they can actually fund this whole project. But as we will find out very shortly, there is an ulterior motive to this, or sort of a higher level to their loyalty towards nature. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A higher level, which is on like this tier of just insane. Anyway, okay.
So Doc and temporary companion Hazel basically turn around and go, "Okay, this is great biodome. Let's go and see another one." But Bad Russian says, "Well,
you're not allowed.
You're not allowed. They, you know, they've got lots of new species, and we don't want to disturb them during their growing phase and stuff like that."
Yeah, and then that's fine. And they're asked to leave, essentially.
Yeah, and the doctor says, "Can I see Marlow?" But Bad Russian says, "No, make an appointment. Bye."
Yeah.
So the entire scene gave us pretty much nothing to go on.
No, the entire scene is just there to show, okay, that there are a whole bunch of plants in there that will come into play later on. That's number one. Number two, to show that Lucy is actually quite entrenched. Like, she is in deep cover in the hothouse. She's got like a pass and walking around and has access and all kinds of shit, and fake Russian is a, like allows her to walk around with Doc and what's her face Hazel unattended. That's the, there's a lot of trust in Lucy, so presumably she's been there for a while. And what else does it show us? Oh, it builds up a little bit of suspense in terms of why are they not allowed into the other Biodos.
Yeah,
that's it.
So we actually get a fairly nice scene now where Lucy has a hidden radio.
Yes, this is actually really funny.
Contacts the doctor,
yeah,
who's back with Hazel
somewhere.
But I imagine it's back in the car being driven around.
Yeah, it's not far away though.
No. It's fairly close.
Yeah.
I think this is just after they've left.
Yeah.
And
this is where it gets a little bit weird to me, because it would make sense to me if when the doc spills his tea on Lucy that he gets an actual pass card from her. But it seems as though he actually slipped her a pass card, like a Lilo Corbin multipass. He slipped it to her, and now she's there. But she was already in the freaking compound. What was she...
Yeah.
This makes... I don't really get this, and I'm basing this on one of the notes online.
Put a pin in that plot hole.
Okay.
But basically, the doctor says that Lucy volunteered for this this job because they're getting to know each other again.
Yeah.
Which is quite nice, because bear in mind that the doctor spent 600 years, on Orbis?
Yeah, I think so.
And, you know, it's actually a very nice callback that they've not forgotten the end of Orbis.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I'm longing for the end of Orbis when we didn't have moving plants. We just had Under the Sea and Little Mermaid.
What were they? Wait, hang on. Let's just have a nostalgic moment. What were they? Were they like oysters? Lobster snails, crab, clams. I hated that one. Oh, it was so dumb. Yeah, okay.
I missed that episode so much because of this one. Okay. Lucy uses the super pass.
Yes.
To go to one of the biodomes that the doc has.
There is a great line here from Lucy. In fact, I think, okay, you know what? Let's soundbite it just because it's so funny. When she goes into the biodome, she sees something and she has to describe to him, obviously over the radio, what she sees. And she says, soundbites.
Soundbite.
There's these sort of lumps, like the ones you use for growing plants in your attic. Oh, what are they called? Hydrate?
That's not important.
It's like, because like her friends grow a pot in the attic or something.
Sounds about right.
Revealing a little bit about her origins.
Yeah, and what she's actually describing is a crinoid pod.
Yeah.
That's what the doctor recognizes it as.
The foley in that biodome is fantastic, by the way. It's all like bubbly and gross and sinewy in a way. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Don't worry about it. Let's speed through this episode and then bomb on until... What are we doing after this? We're recording Father's Day. Spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen. Okay.
Father's Day. Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, Marlowe comes out and basically says, right, I've got you now, Lucy Miller.
This is still on the radio with Doc, who's constantly just going, get out of there, you're out of your depth, get out of there, Lucy.
And then he says hello to the Doc and temporary companion Hazel.
Yeah.
Because he knows that Lucy is recording.
Yeah.
And says, well, Lucy knows too much, so we're now going to kill her.
Yeah.
So, over to the car, the microphone goes dead, just as Lucy's screaming her lungs off. The Doc, on the other hand, is now pretty, pretty annoyed, as he is.
Well, not just annoyed. This is like the 75th time, even just in the episodes that we've reviewed so far on Who Back When, in which the Doctor assumes that his companion has died because of him, ostensibly, because he has said, go off on this mission. One of his companions has died.
And then... Now that the doctor's realised, we get this info dump.
Yeah.
The completely not needed info dump, which is basically recapping the Seeds of Doom.
Is it really, though? Isn't it sort of retconning the end of it?
No.
Okay.
No. It's a recap. Basically, he says, on worlds where the crinoids arrive, vegetation basically fight back. If any of them germinate, every human being and animal on the planet will be dead.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
The Hazel mentions the Harrison Chase incident, and Harrison Chase was the main villain in Seeds of Doom. Sir Colin Thackeray, who again was also mentioned in Seeds of Doom, and he was head of, he's mentioned in Time Flight as well, I think.
Is he head of the World Ecology Bureau?
Yeah, I think he was. Basically ordered the cuttings be taken from the crinoid, which doesn't retcon the ending. It was basically destroyed, but there's nothing to say that, you know, you couldn't take some cuttings left.
Sure.
Because, you know, that's what happens with plants.
Yeah.
So they could find new ways to kill them. But in the end, it was stupid. And we do get a base of new information, which was the cuttings were stolen about 5 years ago.
Yeah. All right. Fair. So now...
But otherwise, it's a recap of Seed of Doom.
Well, in a way, not knowing Seeds of Doom that well, just remembering that I've seen it and remembering the impression that it had on me, it did help me. To people in my position, it was a good thing that they let that in. That's what she said. Anyway, so they're speeding off in the car, and Doc now, fueled by vengeance and anger and this sense of justice, needs to save mankind from itself yet again, and at the same time maybe kick ass and take some names on behalf of Lucy. They tell the driver, stop the car, they get out, and they're now going to break into the hothouse. So they walk up to the perimeter. There are all these trucks around, lots of armed guards all over the place, but somehow they get through. Do they cut the fence? I don't know. There's a massive fence around it.
This is a really, really good line.
Okay.
There's basically this barbed wire fence, massive barbed wire fence. And the doctor has a line which says, it's about time I redesigned my sonic screwdriver so it can cut through wire. And, fun Doctor Who fact,
okay,
in the new Who episode, The Doctor Dances, the sonic screwdriver is shown to be able to do that.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
So he does eventually actually
upgrade his screwdriver.
Yeah. But they can't get through the fence. So basically, the Doc and Hazel...
They jump into a lorry. They jump into one of the trucks, right?
Yes, bingo. Absolutely.
All right, here we go.
And in the back of the lorry, they find some people. Almost like refugee people.
Yeah, and they're just sort of herded in there. It's pretty gruesome. And what follows is, in my view, way too long a scene. But conceptually, it's so sad and it's so freaking horrific that it has to receive a bit of a standing ovation anyway. The scene essentially entails one of these refugees in a terrible fake accent. Terrible.
Which is not unusual for this episode.
No, that's true. But explaining that he came there as a refugee from wherever it was. Where was it? Czech Republic?
Was it Eastern Europe, wasn't it?
He's there from somewhere in Eastern Europe. He has a wife, he has a daughter, they've done something to him, and he's starting to not only forget his family, but he's starting to forget who he is himself. And it becomes very clear that he has been infected or in some way, well, I guess, not bitten, whatever, stung.
Ah, we're actually thinking of two very slightly different scenes.
Oh, okay. Is that on now? Because I thought that was now.
No, that's about 5 minutes later.
Oh, okay.
Because that's not in the lorry.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
Basically, in the... there's a load of Eastern Europeans, illegal immigrants, in the lorry. They all get in, and the doctor makes some sarcastic comment about, you know, humans. And they then get into the hothouse through an access tunnel. And Marlowe and Lucy Miller are watching this on CCTV.
On a screen, yeah. They see
the doctor temporary companion get into Biodome 4. Then the Doc and temporary companion start looking around. They start examining the crinoid pods.
Sorry, and you're then, right. And they see there are all these humans, and they're caged in the biodome. There are all these humans, and this is where we get the 5 minute scene of the dude talking about his family.
Yeah, and this is why. Yeah, because this
sorry,
is why I didn't
gentlemen.
Quite recall it from earlier because I was trying not to listen at this point because they were changing into man eating plants.
Yeah. I am really sorry.
Basically, he was Polish.
Polish, okay. Was he basically Polish or was he Polish?
I think he was basically Polish.
Judging by his accent, yes, I'm going to agree with you. He was basically Polish.
although he could be anywhere from that side of the world with that accent.
Tiny tangent. This is like, I met a former coworker of mine just on the street the other day, and he looks at me. He hadn't seen me in a few years, and I didn't have a beard back then, or a goatee, and he looks at me and he goes like, oh, that's so cool. You've got like a beard. It's like, yeah, like a bit. It's not quite a bit. It's a like bit. Anyway, sorry. He's like Polish anyway.
And basically, he at the end of this 5 minute terror.
I'll cut that.
At the end. No, don't. It's actually quite a good story. At the end of this 5 minutes of terror, he changes into a crinoid.
Mm, and it sounds really terrifying.
Yes.
I mean, not just the turning into some kind of monster, but the process that he undergoes, forgetting his own identity, realizing that he's changing into something, begging them to kill him.
It is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, it really is.
And then he gets shot.
Yeah, by Marlowe.
So Marlowe and fake Russian turn up.
Yep.
and basically they kill fake Polish. The guards bring in Lucy Miller, and
we sort of learn Marlowe. I think this is part one of the two-parter that is Hot House, just about to come to an end. I think it's on this side of the episode shift where Marlowe says something to the effect of, "Listen, I want you to help me with something. I need you to lend me your expertise on crinoids, but in order to ensure your cooperation, I'm gonna pop." Fuck, what is it? Is it now? I can't remember if it's now or if it's in at the start of episode two. I'm going to infect Lucy Miller.
No, it's now.
It is now, okay.
And this is where three things happen.
Okay.
And hence, and you will now see why my rant about recapping the Seeds of Doom is relevant. Normally, I don't mind them recapping stuff like this.
Okay.
But before I get on to the reason why this particular cliffhanger, and the cliffhanger is basically Marlowe putting a pod next to Lucy and about to infect her.
Yeah.
We get the single two worst lines that have ever, ever been uttered on audio Doctor Who, and they come one after another.
Okay, what are they?
You mentalist! You environmentalist!
Oh, it's such a bad pun. I know, it's terrible. It's like, it's Daily Mail bad.
I'm sorry, it is Daily Mail bad. And we sadly also get it recapped at the start of episode 2.
Oh, episode 2, you're right. You're absolutely right. I remember thinking that as well.
Dear listener... I've had to listen to this, so in order for you to really have the full effect, and I'm no Sheridan Smith.
Yeah, I think we should soundbite this twice.
Let's hear Sheridan Smith doing this. Soundbite?
Soundbites.
Let me out, you mentalist! You environmentalist!
I'm sorry, did you catch that? Do we need to hear that again?
Soundbite?
Yeah, soundbite.
Let me out, you mentalist! You environmentalist!
Oh, it does not get better.
And then we get the second worst line, which is Marlowe going,
"Oh, time
Doctor,
for
time for your companion to go green."
Yeah, but I love it when he says
enunciation.
Yeah, but I love it when it is awful. I agree, but I love the way he says that because that absolutely harkens back to the way he would pronounce all of his lines when he played Neil on The Young Ones.
Time for your companion to go green.
Yes, and you know this is not and no criticism at all of Nigel Payne at all.
No, he does a great job. He does a fantastic job.
Now here's my problem.
Okay.
What they have done is this is the exact same cliffhanger that occurs halfway through Seeds of Doom.
Oh, really?
Yes. In that one, it's Harrison Chase and Harrison Chase's guard.
Okay.
Holding Sarah Jane Smith down next to a crinoid pod.
Oh, Jesus.
Intending to infect her for the same reason.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that goes hand in hand with the subject matter. It's the kind of cliffhanger that you wouldn't be able to have a story about someone, about crinoids and some human being sort of on the crinoid side without employing such a cliffhanger.
Doesn't
it's like any horror movie or whatever where you've got someone with a virus or... That happens in every story of this ilk.
I disagree that they didn't need to take the exact same cliffhanger.
Do you think maybe it's an homage then?
No, I think it's a rewrite.
Okay.
You know, this entire story, for the first half, is basically Seeds of Doom. You know, it's...
I regret not having seen Seeds of Doom again just before this review now. Would you say, for listeners, should they absolutely see Seeds of Doom before listening to this? You know what? I would almost say don't listen to this.
I would say don't listen to it because what you actually have is Seeds of Doom is better.
Okay.
And this is the problem, that this is like a poor man's Seeds of Doom.
Oh, I see.
Which is not a good thing. And we've had it before with one of the season one episodes. I can't remember which one it was, where it was a poor man's version of a classic Doctor Who episode. I just didn't do it anywhere near as good.
Holy shit, what was that? Oh, I know what it was. It was The Zygon Who Fell to Earth.
And it was The Zygon Who Fell to Earth. Yeah. Yes, it was a poor man's Terror of the Zygon.
Yeah.
But that was the end of episode one. So at the start of episode two, we get a recap of that line.
Yeah.
Again.
Time for Ms. Miller to go green. I can't do it.
Again. Yeah. And then
the whole cliffhanger is just rendered superfluous. It's exactly like Barbara at the end of episode one of Keys of Marinus versus Barbara 10 seconds into episode two of Keys of Marinus, where it's like, holy fuck, she is dead. Oh no, she's not. There's not even like, I'm going to stand by what I said before. I think the cliffhanger is, it's such a stereotypical thing. It's such an incredibly common trope in this kind of horror sci-fi. But normally it takes on the form of the person is actually infected. That's the cliffhanger. But that then introduces the element of we need to find a cure, or possibly the cure is really easy, but we introduce like a time limit type thing. If we don't inject her with whatever within 10 hours, she's going to turn into a crinoid, that kind of thing. That doesn't happen. Instead, what happens is just like, oh, you know what? Take it back. Let's not infect her. Let's infect Hazel instead.
Yeah, temporary fake companion.
Boom.
Or no apparent reason.
That's fine. Fuck her. She totally, she was constant. Do we even say this? She was on Marlowe's side. She lured the Doctor into Biodome 4. She was on Marlowe's side the whole time. So screw her.
And so she gets infected and we have no sympathy.
Exactly.
At all. So anyway, Marlowe gives us an info dump. He's been researching the crinoid. It's an infection. It possessed the host's mind and basically turned itself into a living plant that can telepathically control all the plants.
That's right. But he wants to do something else with it. He wants to add human consciousness to it. Or at least intelligence to it.
So what he wants to do is create a half-man, half-crinoid that the man can control the crinoid side.
Yeah.
And basically use it as his own personal army in order to take back the Earth from the humanity. To remove, you know, the humanity down to 100 million individuals, which is what you want.
Yeah, pretty much. So I think the line that sums it up, where he says, like, imagine, like, mankind has been cutting down the Amazon rainforest for decades now. Imagine the rainforest fighting back.
Yeah.
All right.
But the Doctor says, no, not going to help you. Because, you know, this is just crazy.
Yeah. So now, anyway, Lucy is locked in a cage with Hazel, who has already been infected. And the Doctor now has to help so that he can get Lucy out of cage. That's pretty much it, I think.
Which is fair.
Yeah, that's totally cool.
Hazel does get a very good line in, which is where she describes Lucy as delicious flesh.
Oh, does she say this to Lucy? Oh, yeah, she's like, oh, God, I could murder a steak right now, which is really weird because I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah. So the Doctor and Marlowe have yet another conversation. Marlowe's been genetically engineering crinoids, and basically the crinoid will, in about an hour, turn into its, you know, big crazy form. And the big crazy form is massive, as shown in season 2.
Does he actually know that it's going to take an hour? I don't think so. I think he already has to confess that Hazel is transforming much, much faster than anyone else has so far.
Yeah, and then Marlowe says, I've been tampering with it, and, you know, at the rate it's going, it'll be very quick.
Okay, that's very possible. No, you're probably right. You're probably right. There is something here, though, that kind of pisses me off, and that is... Okay, so this takes me back to the Space Museum, where the Morrocks? The Morrocks are trying... They have the embalming machine, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
They've embalmed the Doctor up until stage 2 or something. They're like, oh, wait, there's just the final stage left. I think that was the episode name, in fact. And Ian turns up and goes, hey, moron god, you need to now de-embalm the Doctor. The moron goes, that's impossible. I couldn't do that. Ian goes, well, try. He goes, all right, I'll try. He tries. Oh, it turns out you can totally do it. No problem. In this case, you've got Mr. Marlowe, aka Neil. Neil says, listen, I need your help, Doctor, because there's one thing that, no matter what I do, I've not been able to do so far, and that is to get someone to turn into this massive fucking house crinoid who can talk and reason like a human being. The human is always lost in the whole thing. Then he kidnaps the freaking Doctor's companion, pops her in a cage with someone that he just sort of ad hoc infects, and spoiler alert, she's gonna retain all of those human qualities that he said he needed the Doctor for.
Yes, I can see why that pisses you off.
Yeah, it pisses me off. It makes no sense.
Well, Lucy and Hazel have a heart-to-leaf conversation. And
nice.
She basically says, well, now I can hear every plant.
Yes.
In the building.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And so Temporary Companion basically says, you know, she can hear Marlowe and the Doctor having a chat.
Yeah. Because presumably there's like, I don't know, some leftover broccoli somewhere on his, in his office.
And fake Russian.
Yeah.
Speaks to Marlowe and says that all the crinoids in the biodome are basically escaping.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden, okay, so now they, this is another thing that really pissed me off. So the order is put out, kill all the crinoids, because that's the only choice they have. And from 1 second to the next, I don't know if this is right now or if this is in 5 minutes, but honestly, let's not give a shit. It's either now or in 5 minutes, Neil changes his mind completely. He turns 180 in one go.
Yeah, it's now.
It is now. So then it's just, yeah, kill all the crinoids. Yeah, it turns out I was wrong, kill him. What? You were ready to sacrifice humanity. You've kidnapped a fucking Time Lord. You've invested everything into this project and now you just want to abandon it.
So
it's like Van Staten wanting to, sorry to cut you off, it's like Van Staten wanting to fill his little collection with cement.
It is. It's exactly the same as that.
Yeah.
Just on a dime, turns around.
Yeah.
Fake companion and real companion have another chat, and fake companion says, well, all the crinoids are coming here and they're going to set me free and, well, we're going to eat you like the tasty, tasty, warm-blooded meat that you are. Lucy tries to get her to retain her humanity and doesn't look like it works, but then the alarms start going off, the fire alarms or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And magically, Hazel gets all in control of herself.
Yeah, just for a moment.
Just for a moment. But she shows the ability to control all the other crinoids.
Yeah.
Because she basically gets all the crinoids out of the way and Lucy escapes.
Yeah. Is this also where Lucy kind of reminds her of Neil's existence? She goes, no, you stay with me, Hazel. Think about Neil, well, Marlowe. And then Hazel just goes crazy berserk. She just goes, fucking Neil, he's the one who did this to me. And that's like the main reason she wants to control the crinoids. She now wants to set every stick of broccoli going towards Neil.
So in Neil's office,
fake
Russian turns up, even though we thought she was dead.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the intercom, they hear that Hazel is basically now really jonesing for Marlowe.
Yeah.
You know, and then fake Russian does the sensible thing and pulls a gun on Marlowe.
Yeah. Not that I remember this, by the way.
Yeah, but sadly, she's useless, and Marlowe leaves the room and deadlocks it. How they have the ability to deadlock doors from Sonic King in this day and age, I don't know.
Oh, that's a good point.
But
what's really weird with the whole Ondrak fake Russian situation also is that the Doctor goes, okay, right, so it's just you and me now. We need to fix this. We need to save the Earth. And fake Russian just goes, that's not my problem. Well, you're one of the people on this planet. In fact, you're right now standing in the freaking eye of the tornado, like, that is going to engulf all of the Earth. Surely it's going to be your problem pretty soon. In fact, you're not even going to be able to get out of here without it being your problem. So what's a weird reaction?
I think the Marlowe's office breaks down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The doors come in.
But then Lucy storms in.
Yeah, the crinoids are about to kill fake Russian and the doc. But Lucy appears with a fire extinguisher. And the crinoids apparently don't like the cold.
Yeah.
And we get actually my favourite line of the episode, where the Doctor basically turns around and goes, Lucy Miller, how could I have forgotten how brilliant you are?
Yeah.
Because, you know, again, it's going back to the end of Orbis again.
Yeah, and they have such a good relationship. They have such a fantastically, probably one of my favourite Doctor-companion relationships.
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. It really is.
I don't want McGann to switch and have another one. I want him to stay with Lucy. Okay, anyway. Somehow we find out that the crinoids have one more weakness. Remind me, is this now, is this later? It's not just cold, it's also loud noises.
Yeah, they put two and two together that Hazel was able to come in control when the klaxon went off.
Oh, that's what. All right.
That's what they put two and two together.
Okay.
But basically, the Doctor says, well, you know, the moment this reaches its germination point, it'll release, you know, thousands of spores and
into the atmosphere, presumably.
Yeah. Ondrak, fake Russian, says, well, I don't care.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense.
Makes no sense. Earlier. Does she leave? I think she leaves.
Yeah. So basically, the doc gives up and says, right, Lucy, come on, weed killer time.
Yeah.
and they meet up with Marlow and the Crinoids.
Yeah, and Marlow has now, he's struck an accord with the Crinoids. He's convinced them, he thinks anyway, to spare the animals, just kill the humans, but save all of animal life, like innocent animal life.
Because he's got some super energetic plant feed.
Yeah, fertilizer, whatever.
Whatever. There's running and running and running, and the Doc and Lucy get to Biodome 1.
Yeah. Is this where Hazel is?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Hazel is now basically the size of a biodome.
Yeah. But she's still there. She's still with it.
Yeah, and this is where they realise that the Klaxon caused Hazel to become Hazel, not Hazel, not the Crinoid.
Okay.
And he sets off fire alarm.
Yeah. Now it's time to pass some gas in the biodome, I think.
Literally.
Yeah. So there are all these valves. He starts turning on. I don't even know. I can't remember which kinds of chemicals and gases they are, but they're essentially greenhouse gases. Being in a greenhouse and all, quite appropriate.
And, you know, they basically turn it into a massive greenhouse. The air dries out. It gets very, very hot.
Yeah. And it is eventually going to kill all of the plant life in there.
Yeah. And that it is, the, you know, the doctor says to Lucy that, well, it's so hot, everything's so dry, it's going to explode.
Yeah.
So Marlow turns up for his final sort of bit of villainy and says, you know...
He even repeats his fucking green line.
Yes, he does. And, you know, there won't be any cars, cities, no people. It'll be a perfect world.
Yeah, yeah. Rah, rah, rah. No one cares.
Because the klaxon's going off, Hazel eats Marlow.
Yeah. It's actually pretty vicious as well. She tells all of the standard-sized Crinoids, tear his flesh, and then we hear him screaming in agony as he dies. It's pretty grim.
Yeah, I didn't listen to that.
Okay, sorry.
Hazel says, right, Doc, Lucy, go away before I lose control. And then they get out and everything explodes.
Yep, boom, done. Including Hazel, she gets her sort of mercy death.
Yeah, and Lucy's a bit sad at that because Hazel was a good person in the end. And then we get...
a little goodbye scene.
Yeah, it's the John Steed and Mrs. Peel Avengers sort of, oh, we've solved day and therefore we're going to get in a car and go off jollily at the end.
It is nice, though. It is nice because this is the episode that bridges Doc and Lucy not being together in Orbis and not having been together for ages in Orbis, and Doc and Lucy being together as though nothing ever happened going forward. Right. In Beast of Warlock, they're essentially just like, it's as though they never spent... Sorry?
It's back to normal.
Yeah, exactly. It's as though those 600 years never passed. So, yeah, the ending is just, well, I'll drop you off wherever you like, Lucy Miller. Oh, really? Is that a case? I thought maybe you wanted me to stick around. Oh, I really do, blah, 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 blah. And then happy end, kiss, 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 bye-bye. That's it. But...
the end.
But there's a post-credit sequence. And there's a post-credit sequence, and I don't know if it's important in any way. It's set up exactly in the same way as the intro, where you get the newsreader. You know, in the intro, we had the newsreader saying, like, oh, there's been a drought and blah, blah, rah, rah, rah. Heat's rising. No one cares. In the post-credit sequence, it says, water rations are now, like, stuff is kind of balancing out. Everything is fine. But there's some kind of weird religious cult that started around this whole thing. I can't remember what it's called. It doesn't turn up in Beast of Warlock, and it doesn't turn up in, what's it called, Scapegoat after that. But I wonder if it'll turn up later on.
Okay, one second.
Listen to the end. Yeah,
we're
do it.
Putting you on hold, because I just turned this off as soon as I humanly could.
Okay, fair enough.
Give me a second.
Yeah, yeah. We'll be back in just a moment, ladies and gentlemen.
Right, yes.
And we're back. Okay.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Now that I have listened to that, yes, the cult is called the Eight Truths.
The Eight Truths, okay.
Which is also, cunningly enough, the title of the first part of our season finale two-parter.
Oh, nice.
The Eight Truths and World Wide Web. Do you remember when I said spiders earlier?
Oh, crap. Okay, yes,
so
I do.
So that's your season finale for this season being set up there.
Nice. Wait, how many episodes away is that?
Beast of Warlock, We're in Dawn, Scapegoat.
Wait. There's one in between there that I haven't heard.
There's Beast of Warlock.
Yeah, I've listened to that.
We're in Dawn.
I've not heard that.
Ah, The Scapegoat.
I've heard that.
Annabalist, okay. World Wide Web, and, Eight Truths, World Wide Web.
Holy crap. We're in Dawn, I'm gonna have to get. I've skipped that one, unknowingly.
Reviews!
Reviews.
Reviews.
I'll do mine. Because, you know, get it out of the way, and then I can say I am done with this episode.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, on a certain level, it's harmless.
Yeah.
In that it's a piece with no connection to the big Eighth Doctor Adventures plot or any plot.
Okay.
It's a sequel to a Tom Baker episode. It's got the same monsters.
Yep.
It's got exactly the same villain, Alex Marlowe, in place of Harrison Chase.
Okay.
It has some really bad lines. Lucy's "you mentalist, you environmentalist" line is possibly the worst line Sheridan Smith has ever been made to say. And that includes her entire tenure on 2 pints of lager and a pack of crisps. Ultimately, this is a sequel that wasn't wanted or needed.
Fair.
It doesn't add anything to the mythos of the Crinoids. It doesn't advance the Crinoids as a monster species in any way. It doesn't add anything to the character of Lucy Miller. It doesn't add anything to the character of the Doctor.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fluff, which basically, you know, happens after Orbis. Thankfully, Beast of Orlok, which follows it, is significantly better. John Morris, you know, and, you know, I absolutely loved Matt Wall. I thought it was, you know, a really good story. And so I know Jonathan Morris can actually write, and he can write some really, really good stories. But sadly, this just isn't one of them. And, you know, he's got a few others which we will be listening to. And, you know, I just hope that he gets a bit better. 2 out of 5.
Okay, it's ever so slightly less than I'm giving it. I'm approaching this audiobook from a different point of view. Bear in mind, I don't know Seeds of Doom that well. Is it Seeds of Doom or Seeds of Death, by the way?
Seeds of Doom.
Seeds of Doom. I don't.
Seeds of Death was a Patrick Troughton story.
Right, that's what. Yeah, okay. Thanks for that as well. Sorry. So I don't know the original episode that well. I remember seeing it. I have a certain nostalgic connection to it, but I don't know it inside out. And for that reason, all of these little acts of plagiarism in Hot House or failed acts of homage, they're wasted on me. I never had that moment of annoyance. Fuck, this is stolen. This is lifted from the original script. I never had that moment. So in that sense, maybe that's the reason I'm enjoying it a little bit more. I loved Marlowe. I thought he was amazing. I don't remember. I don't know if they've changed it or whatever, but I don't remember the original one being this vicious. The Crinoids are crazy. Like we were talking about before, the process of turning into Crinoid, of forgetting who you are, forgetting your family, the sadness in the voice of this man, this dude from Eastern Europe somewhere, that's far more grown up and dark, like Chris Nolan-y, than what I recall seeing with Tom Baker. I don't know what to say. I hated the accents. I thought the story was incredibly stereotypical and blah, 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 but it was still entertaining. I'm actually almost more impressed by the fact that they're not doing anything to further the character, this creature, this type of this species, since, as you said before, they're not going to turn up that often going forward, because that just makes this an even more obscure and incredibly nerdy reference. Yeah, let's pick that crazy obscure creature from back in the 70s that we haven't used since then, that we're not going to use going forward. Let's just do a story about that, and only the fans will know. I love that. I think that's great. And how often does that, I'm sure that happens more often than just once, that we have a return to an old foe but don't change that foe at all. We just have the same old spiel. I don't mind. I'm giving this a 2.4. Boom. Done. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
But
we have a listener.
We have a listener review.
Yes, we do. A listener mini. Hey, 243. What do you say?
Listener mini.
Our mini comes from Gallifrey and Buccaneer.
Hello, Buccaneer.
And he begins and says, Hot House is a very serviceable Eighth Doctor event story. There isn't anything particularly noteworthy beyond the excellent pre-credit reveal of Lucy as a violent activist, which comes as even more of a surprise after Orbis having her settle back in with the Doctor.
Paul McGann is clearly enjoying himself in this story, as he seems to be in this entire series. His chemistry with Sheridan Smith is excellent as ever, and his interactions with the rest of the cast enjoyable as he infiltrates the Biodome.
Nigel Prainer brings a lot of life to the otherwise stock character of rock star turned eco-activist Alex Marlowe. Prainer is a fine voice actor, and I particularly enjoy his voicing of the auditors in Terry Pratchett's Hogfather.
Oh.
Marlowe's confrontations with the Doctor convey the faith in his misguided cause.
He goes on, I can't speak much on the audio adaptation of the Crinoids, as I'm saving the Seeds of Doom to be my final classic Who story, but the transformations here from human to Crinoid seem particularly grotesque, as the human voice is lost in the alien life form. I literally just made this point, but The cover of this story confused me for a while, as it seems to be an Axon creature on the cover, unless they reuse the costume for the Crinoids in the Seeds of Death. JD, help, he says. That's not me. That's Alan. That's Gallifreyan Buccaneer. He's calling for you, JD.
And I will answer him at the end of his review.
Okay.
He continues, if TARDIS Wikia is to be believed, this ties in, well, chronologically, with the Fifth Doctor main story, Loops Guru, which is a favourite of his, where the rainforest of the world turned desert, making the society shown in Hot House all the more believable. Nice internal consistency here with the timeline, a rare treat in Doctor Who.
And he ends his review by giving Hot House a 3.0. Gallifreyan Buccaneer, thank you so much. Once again, you've sent in a spiffing review. Slightly more big-hearted than JD and myself.
And if you wish to follow Buccaneer, you can follow him on Twitter.
He is at Alan R. Trussler. That's Trussler, two S's.
So,
do you agree with all those? And also answer his question, dude.
Yeah, first of all, yes, it does link in with Loop Guru. One of the things that the audiobooks does very well is that there's a lot of consistency. And we'll get to these eventually, where you have a story that could start off as a Sixth Doctor story, and then 6 months later be followed up as a Seventh Doctor story, and then 6 months later be followed up as a Fifth Doctor story.
Oh, very cool.
You know, there is an awful lot of consistency in the audiobooks. They do this brilliantly. And yes, this the society is basically the follow-up from Luke Guru.
Hmm.
But he is right that the creature on the front of the cover of the audiobook is not exactly what a crinoid should look like. It's sort of half crinoid, half axon. But I agree totally with Buccaneer. It doesn't look very much like what a crinoid looks like. And I think if you go to whobackwhen.com, we will have a picture, as we always do, of the front cover of the audiobook.
Yes, we will.
And I will, if you don't mind, if you could put a comparison with a crinoid from the Seeds of Death in there.
Seeds
of Doom.
Seeds of Doom. Aha, busted.
I got it wrong there. Yeah.
I absolutely will. And an axon as well, which is a species I'm not familiar with.
It's from the Claws of Axos.
Okay, definitely looking that up. Yeah, this looks really weird. I'm looking at the cover now myself. It looks a bit wonky, doesn't it? Oh, well. Cool. Very good. Again, thank you very much, Alan. Awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Next audiobook that we're doing is Beast of Orlok, or have I missed something in between as well?
No, Beast of Orlok.
Which, spoiler alert, I kind of liked.
It's good, it's gothic.
Yeah, it's very gothic. And we take the Terry Nation naming convention to its absolute extreme in that one as well.
That's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. That's the next one. But you should also check out our new Who reviews. Check out the classic Who reviews. Next up, I believe, is
The Massacre
of St. Bartholomew's Eve, which I'm doing as a solo cast. But after that, there's going to be another one with a surprise guest. Who do you think that's going to be, JD?
I don't know.
Anyway, I may be joined by someone who's incredibly knowledgeable on the subject. This is inside information for all the fans who listen to all of our episodes and don't just listen to the classic reviews or just the new Who reviews. Yeah, don't tell anyone else. In the meantime, why don't you follow us on Twitter? JD, you are, if I'm not mistaken, at Marius Kane. Kane spelled with a K, Nespar?
It was last time I checked.
Excellent. And I am at Ponkin. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud if you are so inclined. SoundCloud.com/whobackwhen again. Look for us on Google+ and on Reddit and wherever you think people may have said something about us. And why not give us a rating and review on iTunes as well? It would mean the world to us. So thanks in advance for that.
Well, thankfully this episode is over. So
yeah,
from me, I've been JD, hating this episode entirely. And you've been?
Ponkin, and I've been rather ambivalent on the subject. Thank you for listening.
Goodbye.
Be right and excellent to each other. Oh, God.
Oh, thankfully Father's Day.
This is so much better.
Oh, God, yes.
Who back when?